Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The following is a special KMOX sports presentation. Welcome to the Strike Zone. Powered by Graybar, your source for electrical and data communication products for more than 150 years. Now, the Strike Zone on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Hey, let's talk a little baseball on an off night. Why don't we? We got Cardinals and Reds here tomorrow night at 7:15, and pregame will be starting in about 24 hours. It's 6:20 for tomorrow night, Cardinals and the Reds. And a little bit different circumstance for the Reds coming into this series. I mean, they of course, these two teams met at the beginning of the season, and the Reds took two out of three, and they played really well after that as well. I mean, they swept the Pirates after that, and they won the first game against the Diamondbacks. The Reds at one point were 5-1. They've struggled a bit here lately. They just got swept by the Diamondbacks today. You know, finished that off today. They lost 14-11 today after losing 8-5 yesterday and 5-4 the day before that. They also lost a game against the Indians before. So they've got a four-game losing streak going into the weekend series. We got a lot to do on the show. We will talk a bit about that series, of course, specifically looking ahead to the Cardinals and the Reds. We'll be talking a bit about the early going here in Major League Baseball with Brad Lidge from MLB Network Radio coming up in a couple of minutes. We'll catch up with J.J. Cooper. He's the executive editor of Baseball America, and we'll catch up with him next hour. You know, minor league baseball is getting ready to start up here in a couple of weeks. And it's, you know, I mean, everything's different, right? This is the first year that, you know, or since they reduced the number of minor league teams, for example. And there are all kinds of rules experiments going on in the minor leagues. And a lot to learn about prospects because we haven't seen most of these prospects play since 2019. So really interesting stuff. And we'll also talk to J.J. Cooper about the Cardinals farm system and the guys that are closest to the big leagues and all of that. We got that coming up at 7:15. So Brad Lidge in a few minutes, J.J. Cooper at 7:15. In the meantime, or in between all of that, in and around all that, we're going to be talking about Cardinals-related issues. They're not all like directly Cardinals conversations, although they apply to the conversations we're having, you know, on a day-to-day basis. I want to start on this, and I know it shouldn't need to be said, but based on the reaction that I get every time something goes wrong with the Cardinals, I do feel like I want to remind everybody that like 18 games is 3 weeks out of a 6 month season. There is a long way to go. And I don't know why so many people live and die day to day with a sport that is every day for 6 months. I mean, I get like the interest. I follow baseball intently, and I love the fact that it's day to day. But we don't know enough to draw conclusions, and I'm not sure I understand becoming this frustrated, or really even legitimately frustrated, this early in the year. I mean, I'm looking around. I see Yankee fans losing their minds in New York because the Yankees are 6-11. And how dare they have a bad start to the season? You know, I've seen Twins fans that are panicking because they're in last place. They're 6-11 to start the season and to open the year. That, you know, they came in as the favorite to win the AL Central. Meanwhile, you've got the Royals, a team that certainly is going to be better, I think, than they were last year. But they're not a contender, and they're 10-7 in first place. But they're in first place with a negative run differential. Like, We all need to, like, just calm down. Everybody needs to calm down. Seattle's 11-7. Seattle has the second-best record in the American League. In fact, I think they have the third-best record. They're tied with a couple of teams with the third-best record in Major League Baseball. The Mariners aren't that good. They're going to finish third or fourth place in that division, maybe fifth place. Now, actually, the Rangers will finish last. I feel pretty good about that. See, but Seattle's going to finish fourth or fifth in that division, and they're 11-7 right now. So don't start planning parades for teams that are off to good starts, and don't freak out, man. I mean, we could freak out in June and July and August and September. There's plenty of time for freaking out later when you know a lot more about how this is all going to go. But right now, there's nothing to freak out about. Now, there are concerns. Every one of these teams has concerns. I mean, the Mets have played 13 games. They've scored 42 runs. I mean, that's a concern. They have a negative 14 run differential. So, you know, and again, there are all kinds of reasons that fans can have concerns. And your concerns about the Cardinals are valid, but they're not finalized right now. This is, you know, like this stuff is going to go back and forth over the course of the year. There are going to be stretches where they look like they have here lately, where they keep losing series. There are going to be stretches where they go win 7 or 8 out of 10. And they are neither of those teams. They are neither the team that loses every series or the team that wins every series. They're going to fall in the between. They're going to be somewhere between 86 and 90 wins. They and probably the Brewers too. So let's have the conversations about what's right and what's wrong with the team with that in mind. And I would be telling you this exact same thing if they were sitting here at 12-6 in first place. Not time to print the parade tickets at that point. Not time to start sending out invitations for that. So everybody calm down. So we are going to talk about what we're learning, though, because we are learning about these teams. It's just that the learning takes some time so that we can have enough information to draw really good conclusions from it. So we'll talk about more of that coming up next with Brad Lidge from MLB Network Radio here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Strike Zone, powered by Graybar on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, great to be with you guys on a Thursday night, little night off for the Cardinals. Now, there is action going on elsewhere. We'll tell you about that a little bit later on in the night. But right now, I want to talk a bit about what we've seen so far here in the early part of the season with Brad Lidge from MLB Network Radio. He co-hosts Inside Pitch with Casey Stern on weekdays, 1 to 4 p.m. Central Time on MLB Network Radio. First of all, Brad, thank you for jumping on again. I always appreciate you, and hope you're doing well.
Absolutely. You know, it's my pleasure. And yeah, I'm doing great out here in Colorado, and the snow is finally melting today, and it's starting to look a little bit like spring.
That's good. That's good. Well, hopefully for all of us, well, before long, it'll be that way everywhere. So hopefully for you guys, it'll get there sooner rather than later. I don't know about you, but I, you know, there's only one thing I hated more than rainouts as a kid growing up, whether it was my games or, you know, big league games that I was planning on going to or watching. And the worst thing than rain was snow.
Oh, yeah. It's much worse. When snow's on the ground, it's hard to get into the baseball mindset. You know, it just doesn't mesh well with baseball.
No doubt about it. So early on, I started the show, Brad, before we had you on, just trying to, you know, people are not in a panic in St. Louis, and nor should they be. But I talked a bit about how, you know, uneven and weird things can look after, you know, 15 to 20 games in a season. And this is why we play 6 months. From a guy that, you know, played this game and played, you know, for a long time in the big leagues, how do you guys talk about it? How did you guys talk about, you know, various stretches of the season, especially when things maybe weren't as good as you wanted them to be?
Yeah, I think, you know, listen, as a player, you're always falling back on the reality that you know all too well, and that is that the season is 162 laboring games with many stretches where you're playing bad and many stretches where you're playing good and many stretches where you're playing mediocre. And I think, you know, it's easy to kind of fall back on that as a player and not to panic, you know, regardless of if fans are doing it. I know Yankees fans, you know, we've been talking about that. Right. We're just getting tons of calls. It's the end of the world, you know. I mean, it's just silly. But, you know, that being said, players are never going to feel that way. They've been doing it, you know, even as you go through the minor leagues, you understand how long the season is. So I guess the bottom line is, you know, you go through these years where you can start off slow. Shoot, in 2005, I know St. Louis Cardinals fans remember the season well. You know, the Houston Astros, the team I was on, we started off 15-30 and ended up going to the World Series. So, I never think too much about, you know, a start of a season, even through the first like month and a half. You know, at that point, you really need to pick it up. But the first month and a half, there seems to be all kinds of crazy anomalies and weird things are happening. But then at some point, if you have good players and you have a good team, and you know, there's and guys are healthy, then you're probably going to end up doing something close to what you thought you were going to do at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, for sure. Now, with the understanding of what we just talked about, that it's early, and certainly, you know, the old cliche is that pitchers are ahead of hitters early in the season. And I mean, it probably is true to a degree, but I'm not sure it's 100%. But boy, it's been a rough early go for hitters, Brad. I mean, offense is down, strikeouts are up, batting average is down in the 230s around Major League Baseball. And it's funny, we, you know, every team seems to be talking about their lineup struggling. And I mean, it's a constant theme, I think, throughout the game right now.
It is remarkable. You know, we've seen this trend of, you know, averages going down, strikeouts going up, you know, over the last, I don't know, decade or so. And it seems like this year, all of a sudden, it's just become exponential. And I do think that, you know, the ship will right. Things will get back to normal. But it is part of a trend, and it's a continual trend. And it is certainly a world of swing and miss now. And, you know, we were talking about Javi Baez for the Cubs the other day. I mean, he had one walk. I don't know what he did last night, but he had one walk and 35 strikeouts as a hitter. I mean, I don't even know how that's humanly possible to do that. But, you know, there he stood. And on the other side of that, Corbin Burnes, you know, starting pitcher from Milwaukee, has got 40 strikeouts and zero walks. So we were, you know, trying to imagine what would happen if they went toe-to-toe. But anyway, the bottom line is that we are seeing, you know, pitchers with massive, massive strikeout numbers. You know, that's a record that Burnes had set. And you know, Shane Bieber just tied Nolan Ryan's record for most strikeouts through the first four games of the season. We're just seeing massive strikeout numbers because even more, you know, than we've been seeing this trend, even more this year, hitters are just continuing to swing for the fence. It's all or nothing approach. Nobody has really, you know, decided to concern themselves with doing the little things anymore. And that's, like I said, we understand that's part of a general trend that's been happening for more than a decade, but it seems to be even more like, you know, exponential this year. So it's an alarming thing for sure. And MLB certainly knows about it, but it's just affecting everybody thus far in the season. It's not like home run rates are down. I mean, maybe they're down a little bit, but, you know, they're still up. It's just, it's average. It's guys doing the little things right. It's, you know, I say right. It's doing the little things that used to happen. We just don't see that anymore in the game. And I think more and more teams are accepting a lower average for a higher outcome when they actually do put the ball in play.
Yeah, it's interesting because you're right. You know, you've got a few things going on at the same time, right? I mean, you've got the approach, which is selling out for power more often than not, and then you've got all of these amazing advancements that we've seen in the training of pitchers, right? I mean, the technology and the knowledge there, you know, guys that would normally be throwing 93 are throwing 99, and, you know, we understand more how to get velocity, spin rates, and tunneling, and you throw all that together with, well, I mean, I don't know how much you've talked about it, but with all of the, let's just say, grip help that some pitchers have in the big leagues, work with the help of all that. There's just a lot working at one time.
It's a good point. We've certainly talked about, you know, grip aids for sure. And, you know, look, we want to have a universal system, you know, in regards to grip where, like, if hitters are okay with pitchers, you know, putting a little something sticky on the ball so the hitters don't get drilled on those cold days, then whatever that is, that substance should be, you know, next to the rosin bag behind the mound so every pitcher has access to it and there's not a, you know, a big discretionary thing there. But, I think, we're seeing, you know, and I say that hitters aren't having this approach they used to have. Well, that's true, but it's also, you know, harder to have a great approach when you're seeing exploding fastballs because, look, if I went back and gripped a fastball with a little more stick on my hand and I had a pure backspin fastball, you know, your fingertips, the last thing to touch the ball, if they can pull down just a tiny bit harder on that ball because there's a tiny bit more grip on those fingertips, then you're going to have just an extra amount of spin rate, which creates a higher velocity on the fastball. And if you're throwing a curveball or a breaking ball, it creates extra spin on those two. So the pitches are nastier. I mean, they legitimately are breaking more and are at a higher velocity. So it's not surprising we're seeing swings and misses just from that alone. But when you combine that, to your point, with hitters just, you know, an all or nothing approach, and trust me, nothing drives me more crazy than when a guy gets up and there's a runner on second base and, you know, one out, and they're down by one run, and all he's got to do is just get him to third base, and instead of getting him to third base, he just swings at three straight, you know, sliders in the dirt as hard as he can. I mean, one part of me is drooling and I wish I could get back there and throw again. Another part of me is just like, man, this is just not acceptable for big league hitters to do this and to, you know, to strike out in that way. So it's an evolution of the game. And like I said, I know MLB is a little bit frustrated with that. They are trying to do things in the minor league levels where they can incorporate more stolen bases and things like that. But it is, I think, for a baseball purist, an alarming trend, to say the least. And I don't even think it's a trend anymore. I just think it's where the game is now.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of it, Brad, is in, and I, you know, when people ask me why this is, I mean, let's be honest, man, the biggest paydays are for power hitters. Right? I mean, you know, if you want to incentivize people to do different things, well, then those things need to get paid. And if they don't, people want to hit home runs because that's how you make $25, $30 million a year.
Absolutely. I mean, no one's getting paid for stealing 20 bases anymore. Nobody cares about that. Right. You know, and on the flip side of that, I mean, pitchers are getting, you know, if they're not getting paid more for strikeouts, they're looked at as somebody that has a higher ceiling and a higher potential if they have more strikeouts. So pitchers are trying to generate, you know, okay, I might walk a few more guys, but if I have a lot of strikeouts per nine innings, then front offices are going to see that and they're going to say, well, he's going to put it all together, but he's got the high strikeout rate. And we love that. And we love seeing the velocity. And, you know, if we bring him over to our squad, well, you know, our pitching coach will help him figure everything out. So, you know, the guy that could go out there and get ground ball outs, you know, quick ground ball outs, that guy's kind of a dying breed as well. I mean, pitchers are playing for the strikeout, hitters are playing for the home run. And when you put those two things together, you're right. It's ugly, but also it is what's getting paid. And so it's kind of an unfortunate mix.
Yeah. And this is, I know you guys have talked about it. I've heard you guys get into the various ideas to experiment with. And I think it's a really challenging thing, Brad, to try to legislate it, even though you might have to try. I mean, right, other sports have. You know, the NFL has made all kinds of changes that allowed for more open offense. Yeah. NBA and NHL did the same thing, too. I mean, all of the major sports in the U.S., you know, the biggest ones, and I don't know if they've done that in soccer in the U.S., but I know that, you know, the other major sports here in the U.S., they've had those points of emphasis where they wanted more open offense. They wanted more action because it's more entertaining. And they found ways to tweak the rules. The question here is, how in baseball do we do that? And I think that's what's so great about the experiments in the minor leagues. At least they're going to get some idea of how each of those things work.
I agree. I think, you know, I've kind of maybe in the last couple of years given up on being old school, so to speak. I just kind of conceded to the fact that, you know, my son can't sit down and watch a nine inning game to save his life. So, you know, I think we're at a point where we want to appeal to kids more. We want more balls put in play. We want stolen bases. We want more action on the diamond. And, you know, I think they're trying to, you know, they've limited, you know, pitchers' pickoff attempts in the minor leagues. They're making the bases bigger, you know, whenever these leagues start back up. And they made the bases bigger, and you know, which will encourage more stolen bases, and it's an injury thing as well. But you know, there's a lot of things they're trying to do, and the experimentation process, at this point, I'm all for. I think we have to keep up. You know, baseball's been so steeped in tradition and statistics, it's very difficult to persuade people to make rule changes. And these aren't necessarily rule changes, but MLB has to make some tweaks. Otherwise, it's going to get you know, continue to become more of a niche sport, however you pronounce that word. And we don't want it to go there where only people that are watching baseball are baseball fans. We want it to appeal to people that aren't used to watching a game, that can turn on the TV and see some action and be like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Look at those athletes. But instead it's going the opposite direction of that. And it's not good for, you know, baseball's demographics in the future. So these rules need to be tweaked. There need to be some changes, and I'm all for it at this point.
Brad, last thing, we'll close on this. Just your general thoughts. I know not necessarily based on the 18 games we've had or whatever, but just really kind of using preseason expectations and all that. How do you see the National League Central Division playing out as we go for the next 5.5 months?
Yeah, the NL Central is going to be a dogfight all year long. The things I feel confident in saying is that at some point Pittsburgh, you know, with their they have a big negative run differential right now. They're playing close to 500 ball. At some point, the wheels are going to fall off there. No offense, but they just don't have the team. They're going to finish in the bottom of the division, and I strongly also believe that the Cubs are going to trade several of their big names away at the deadline. So I think when you combine all of that, the Cubs will probably finish in fourth place. So that leaves the Reds, the Cardinals, and the Brewers. The Cincinnati Reds ownership seemed to have kind of given up on the squad this offseason, trading away a lot of guys in the bullpen. Look, Cincinnati's going to hit. Those guys are going to hit home runs. But I think they're going to have, you know, not the pitching and especially not the bullpen to be able to contend. So that leaves the Cardinals and the Brewers. I pick the Cardinals to win the division. I will still lean in that direction because I think of all the teams, even though at times the Cardinals maybe don't look super strong, they probably have the most balanced team. But the Milwaukee Brewers have, I think, far and away the best pitching staff top to bottom when you look at the rotation and the bullpen. And so that's going to put the Brewers fighting right there with the Cardinals toward the end of the season. It'll be very interesting to see what kind of offense the Brewers are able to generate. But the Cardinals will be in a dogfight with Milwaukee, I think, as this season goes on. I think those are the two teams that are going to come out of the Central. I'm not sure if there's going to be a wild card team in the Central. We'll kind of have to see. But
yeah,
certainly it's going to be a very tight finish, I think, between St. Louis and Milwaukee.
Yep, kind of the same way I felt about it coming into the year. Brad, thanks so much, man. I appreciate you taking some time out. You know I love Inside Pitch with you and Case. You guys do a great job. Thanks for doing it. Enjoy the games, and hopefully we'll talk to you down the road a little bit.
Awesome. Yeah, absolutely. It was great talking to you, and we'll talk to you down the road.
All right. See you, bud. That's Brad Lidge from MLB Network Radio. Of course, he's the co-host of Inside Pitch afternoons, 1 to 4 p.m. With Casey Stern. And those guys do an absolutely great job. Really enjoy them. I don't always get to listen because I'm getting ready for shows and stuff now. But, I mean, when I'm driving around, especially when I'm driving around the country traveling for baseball tournaments and stuff, I mean, that is definitely – those guys are my go-to in the afternoon when I get a chance to tune in on MLB Network Radio. All right, coming up next, a couple of Cardinal-specific things I want to get into. One is what we're going to start with next up. I'm going to state something that's really not controversial, and then I'm going to explain it. I believe in physics. I believe in geometry. I believe in probability. I'll tell you what I mean coming up here on KMOX.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Get the inside story on what's happening with your St. Louis Cardinals this season directly from the Redbirds manager. It's the Mike Schilt Show, Sunday mornings at 10:15, sponsored by Bath Fitter on your voice of the St. Louis Cardinals, KMOX.
All right, so two quick things I want to hit on before we run out of time in this hour. And one of them here is it's kind of building off of a partial conversation we had last night after the ball game into the latter part of the show as we were running out of time. And that is that when I talk to you guys about player performance, good or bad, by the way, doesn't matter whether it's somebody that's performing well or not performing well, I'm not generally going to focus on my opinion on those things. I'm simply going to look at what does the baseball tell me, right? Like there's, you know, hitting coaches forever used to tell hitters, let the ball tell you where it wants to go, right? Let the ball tell you. You know, if the ball's away, it wants to go that way. If it's in, it wants to go. It wants to be pulled. You know, well, this is the same idea here. The ball is telling me what I'm bringing to you guys when it comes to player performance, whether it's a hitting or pitching, whatever. I mean, you know, the old basketball joke is ball don't lie, right? The ball doesn't lie. It tells us what is happening. Now, it doesn't predict the result, right? It doesn't guarantee a result. And I'm going to, you know, instead of using Matt Carpenter in this argument, because that's such a tipping point for everybody, I don't know why. I joked last night. I mean, for some reason, he's become the new Eric Brewer. You know, 10 years ago, people could not stop ripping Eric Brewer for all the problems that the Blues had when the problem was the team didn't have enough good players. And, you know, when you bring up Matt Carpenter, people just tune out. So I'm not even going to go into the Matt Carpenter side of this. Let's talk about Paul Goldschmidt. Because what the ball is telling us is that Goldie is going to be just fine. What the ball is telling us is that he's hitting the ball hard. And he's hitting the ball hard often. And again, as of a few days ago, he had the most hard hit balls in the sport. He's in the top 5% in hard hit rate. Exit velocity is fantastic. His expected numbers are all way better than the actual numbers, right? I mean, he's slugging .347. Based on the batted ball data, he should be slugging .518, right? I mean, or sorry, .507. Close enough. And because he's Paul Goldschmidt, I think most people are kind of comfortable, you know, he's going to be okay. It is important to understand, though, that this new way of talking about things, these new measurements that are available, are not new ideas in baseball. We've always known that hitting the ball hard is a good thing. We've always known that hitting the ball hard in the air is how you get production. That's how you get extra base hits. And extra base hits are how you score runs in bunches. And we just talked about it with Brad Lidge, that one of the reasons that the sport has gone this way is that with pitchers being so good at striking people out, it's hard to string together three or four or five hits. It's as hard to do that as it is to get one guy to hit a bomb. Stringing together three or four hits with the way that pitching is right now and the way that bullpens are used right now is not easy as it used to be. And it was never easy to begin with. It was a hard thing back in the day, and it's harder now. And I think that these are things that we have to accept, right? I'm trying to counsel baseball fans. You cannot just look at a batting average. And you know this, and it's instinctive. If you played Little League Baseball, you know this. Because every time you hit a ball hard and made an out, somebody would tell you, don't worry about it. You hit the ball hard, that's all you can do. And that's the truth. It's the reason why old-time players used to have a phrase they used called hang with them. Hang with them. Because you hit it hard and somebody caught it. Hang with them. That's a hang with them. We all understand that this game is weird, right? You don't always get rewarded for hard contact, and sometimes you get rewarded for bad contact. And so it is weird. But over time, over 6 months, if you keep hitting the ball hard, eventually you're going to reap those rewards. And I don't understand the pushback when people talk about exit velos or things like that. I don't understand why people want to refuse to accept it. I keep hearing people say, I can trust my eyes. Right, because you're a trained scout. Because you're a major league hitting coach or major league pitching coach or whatever. I mean, like that, it's not that hard to say, I believe in physics. Physics tells me that when I hit the ball hard, this is the reaction. Add in a little geometry, right? Launch angle, whether you hit it on the ground, on the line, or in the air. And then throw in probability, right? Math. Is it really that hard to believe in science and math? Is it? I don't think it is. Now, this is the point that you have to understand, though, is that these numbers can tell a good or a bad story. If somebody's overperforming, they're going to tell us that, too. And we can see that, and we can say, all right, well, this guy's putting up numbers now, but you probably should expect some kind of decline because he's not hitting the ball very hard. He's had some luck. And the nice thing is we have these tools to understand it. And no, they're not perfect. It's not a direct path one to the other. You can't say, well, Paul Goldschmidt's expected slugging is 507. So by August, that's what it'll be. We don't know for sure. I mean, it could be in that range. It could be better. It could be worse. That's why it's probability and not certainty, right? We all understand that. But the game has always been that. I'm asking you not to push back on these simple measurements of what we've always known is a part of the game. I mean, it's funny because people, I don't want to hear about exit velocity or launch angle. Really? Well, everybody talks about velocity with pitchers, and they have for 100 years. There's a reason why hard throwers are desirable. There's a reason why they've always been desirable. You don't have to be that to be successful. I mean, Greg Maddux exists. But so does Randy Johnson, and so did Roger Clemens, right? I mean, like, velocity for a pitcher has always been desirable. Arm strength for position players has always been desirable. And the offensive version of that is exit velocity. There's more to pitching than velocity. We know it. Got to throw strikes. Got to be able to change speeds. Just like there's more to hitting than just exit velocity. Because if you hit the ball 100 miles an hour, but you're beating it straight into the ground, you're out 99% of the time. All right, it's not that much, but it's a lot. Major league infielders scoop up ground balls and they eat them for lunch. And you're out when you hit ground balls. So we understand there's more to it, right? And by the way, the other part of it is also how much contact you're making, right? Right. If you're striking out too much, that's a problem. And right now, that's part of the problem with he who shall not be named. That's the problem with Matt Carpenter. Part of the argument against him and the one flaw in his game right now is that strikeout rate is really high. And, you know, he is hitting the ball very hard when he hits it, but he does need to hit it more. And I think that's true for a number of guys, but it's particularly true in his case. So having said all of that, I do want to explore for a couple of minutes the Cardinals lineup and make the point that the lineup's inconsistency is not one person's fault. Get to that next up here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Strike Zone, powered by Graybar on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, we continue on here on KMOX. More on the Strike Zone coming up next hour. In fact, we'll talk more about Cardinals prospects, the minor league season starting, and what we can learn from the minor leagues this year relating to the major leagues down the road with J.J. Cooper of Baseball America starting up at 7:15. So one last thing I wanted to get into, and this is a relatively quick point, and that is that, you know, the problems in the Cardinals lineup at this moment are not the problem of one guy, and they're not because of one spot in the order being deficient. You know, we get this irrational upset, you know, people upset about, oh, Matt Carpenter's playing, man. But there's nobody pushing him out of a spot at the moment. And B, it's more than that, right? I mean, the streakiness of Paul DeJong plays into this. Believe it or not, and you guys are going to hate me for saying it, but too bad, Justin Williams has had his fair share of bad luck this year. He is really doing a nice job. And actually, the last week, he's starting to see some of those results. But, you know, he's done a great job of creating hard contact. And eventually, it will turn. He's hitting .222. His expected average based on the quality of his contact is .283. If he gets anywhere near that, we're going to be really happy. And over the last week, he started to produce some results to go along with the quality of contact. So his bad luck has been a problem. You know, somebody stepping up in the outfield outside of Williams and Carlson has been a problem. Paul Goldschmidt's bad luck. Look, I mean, when you're doing the things, and yeah, there are a couple things there that need to be better. I mean, he's striking out a little more than he did last year. His walk rate is down quite a bit compared to where it normally would be. I would assume that'll come back just based on common sense because he's been doing it for so long. I wouldn't imagine he's going to have a severe drop off from one year to the next in that regard. And then once that starts to settle in, and he also starts to get a little bit better luck with where he's hitting the ball and where, you know, what part of the field he's hitting it to and all that, I think you're going to see Paul Goldschmidt's numbers level off. And I do think that Goldie and Arenado are going to have to be the flagpole hitters in this lineup. Those guys are going to have to be putting up their normal numbers. And Arenado's close, but he's a little bit off. And once that happens, and maybe hopefully one other person sets up, we can see more consistency. If not dominance, at least some consistent offense. All right, stick around. We're hitting on the rotation when we come back here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Strike Zone, powered by Graybar on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, coming up in just a couple of minutes, we're going to catch up with J.J. Cooper. He is the executive editor of Baseball America. Got a lot of ground to cover with J.J. We'll talk a bit about the Cardinals' prospects, and obviously a lot of them we haven't seen since 2019, and there's a whole mystery to be unraveled there, right, with what how some guys progress. How much did some people progress without even playing in any games? Like, that's going to be an interesting part of this whole conversation. Plus, just getting back to minor league baseball and a different look, right? I mean, there are 40 fewer minor league teams than there were the last time we had minor league baseball. And there are experiments going on in all levels of the minor leagues that could end up working towards increasing the amount of action in the game. And, I don't know that we can effectively legislate getting more contact into the game. We can try, and I'm all for trying, by the way. But it's going to be really hard. I mean, like, you could see, like, when Derek Gould and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago on his podcast, on the best podcast in baseball, we couldn't even agree between the two of us, two guys that get along, who see a lot of things the same way in Major League Baseball. We couldn't even agree on the better way to adjust the strike zone. I think you make it smaller. He thinks you make it bigger at the bottom and force guys to swing the bat. And, if we don't agree on it, I'm sure it's going to be hard to find agreement at the Major League level there too. But one thing we can do is encourage and incentivize other forms of action, like base stealing. You know, if base stealing is too difficult right now, if it's considered too risky right now, well, maybe there are ways that we can make it less risky. And that is action, right? It may not be perfect, but if we could get a few more steals, if a guy got on base like back in the day, right, when Vince Coleman got on base, what did you anticipate? Right, when Ozzie Smith got on base, what did you anticipate? Back in the day in Oakland, when Ricky Henderson got on base, I mean, that jacked up other teams immensely. And who knows, maybe the extra attention that would have to be paid there and the extra adjustments that have to be made there could lead to more mistakes from pitchers and more opportunities for hitters. Who knows? I mean, that was what people said about guys like Vince Coleman and Tim Raines and Ricky Henderson back in the day, is that when those guys were on base, it just disrupted everything. You know, you want to talk about limiting shifts, well, make sure people have to cover bases, right? I mean, how much are you really going to shift if you've got the modern-day equivalent of Vince Coleman, Ricky Henderson, those guys on second base? How much are you really going to take the chance if they're going to go ahead and steal third base on you if you get too froggy? So we'll see how those go, and we'll talk about a bunch of those things with J.J. Cooper coming up in a few minutes. I wanted to spend just a couple minutes on the Cardinals rotation, and what we've seen here the last few days is great. And I do think it's a sign of what's going to come. I do think the rotation's going to stabilize. And I mean, I thought that preseason that it was going to be one of the strengths of the team. So I guess I'm not really stretching too far by saying I think it's going to stabilize here as you go forward. You're going to get more innings out of guys like Flaherty and Wainwright. We got more innings yesterday out of Carlos. Hard to know, start to start, if he's going to give you that, but he definitely did yesterday. And we know that, you know, I feel pretty good about Kwon Young Kim getting you a pretty regular, you know, 5 2/3 or 6 once he's back to somewhat normal. And I know that when Michaelis is healthy, that's something that he's going to bring to the table too. He's definitely somebody that can go out there and get you some innings. And this past weekend was really, really a big deal in that regard. To get three straight guys, sixth inning or beyond, all of them pitched well. Flaherty had a bunch of runs allowed, but only two really were credited to him because of some defensive mistakes, because of an error, strangely, by Nolan Arenado. and that error kind of opened the door for some of the runs to follow. But the confidence I had in the preseason, so off season and spring training, was about, you know, Flaherty being a top of the rotation guy, and we're starting to see that. The first start was bumpy. The last two have been more like what you expect from Jack Flaherty. Actually, the last three, I should say. He's allowed three earned runs in his last three starts combined. So, the one thing that, he and Wainwright and the other starters are talking about is, yes, we want that. We got to get deeper into the game, and that's, of course, going to work better for the bullpens. But you keep pitching like that, and you'll pitch deeper into games. I do think it's going to turn. And what was interesting is, and again, it's the same thing that people yell at me about when it comes to Matt Carpenter or any other hitter whose numbers aren't good. I talked about this before Waino's last start. The numbers on him, the underlying numbers, were indicating that he was getting a lot of bad luck. That he was due for things to turn back in the other direction. And it happened this time around. It happened in the last start, and it's still pointing in that direction. Everything that you look at with Wainwright tells you that he's had bad luck. That the numbers that exist now are not as good as they should be. Right, his expected ERA right now is 3.52, yet it sits at 5.03, and he's throwing more strikes, and his walk rate is in line with where it's been in the past. And, you know, he's limiting hard contact. I mentioned this before his start the other day. You know, he's in the top third of major league pitchers when it comes to limiting hard contact from opponents. And that's still good, which means, hey, you might be a little concerned about some of those early season numbers, but don't be. Relax. Things are pointing in the right direction when it comes to Wainwright. And I think that getting Waino going, you know, like just getting the breaks the way that they should be rather than having some of that bad luck. And obviously Flaherty, getting Kim back, I do think the rotation is going to start to go in the correct direction. And I think the bullpen, you know, once you do that, the bullpen settles in and you've got one of the best, most diverse bullpens in the game at that point. All right, so we're going to change gears and we're going to start looking toward the future. In fact, building the future is powered by Graybar, and Graybar is powering the new era. We're going to talk about minor league baseball being back and prospects and all of that with J.J. Cooper from Baseball America when we come back here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Strike Zone, powered by Graybar on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, back in on KMOX here on a Thursday. No ball game tonight. We'll get back to that tomorrow. We've got the Cardinals and the Reds over the course of the weekend and a nice long 7-game homestand with the Phillies coming to town after that and some really interesting pitching matchups that we'll be talking about throughout the show today as well. Right now, though, we're going to be focusing on the start of a new season. And it's a little bit different than usual, like everything else is in 2020 and 2021. But the minor league season is going to be starting here soon, hopefully. Fingers crossed that we don't have any setbacks on that. The draft is coming before we know it, so these things are starting to pile up. And on those two notes, happy to have J.J. Cooper with us tonight, the executive editor for Baseball America. And first of all, J.J., thank you for taking time out, man. I know you guys have been busy pushing out the minor league preview for the print edition of the magazine. You guys have been killing it on the website. So thanks for squeezing us into all of that, man. We appreciate it.
Always happy to talk baseball.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Really good way to put it. In fact, I think that's in your Twitter handle, right? Something along those lines. Maybe not those exact words. Oh, it's lots and
something
lots
like
of baseball.
That, yeah. Again, this is what I do.
So tell me a bit about the run up to this minor league season and the work that you guys have done here and how that has compared to kind of previous quote unquote normal years, because obviously everything's out of whack and we still have minor league spring training going on right now. What's it been like? Even going back to last year, but especially this year, gathering information and doing things that are not the same way you guys had done them in the past.
So there's two parts to that. I mean, we have right now, this is 2021 will showcase the biggest change to minor league baseball in, I'd say, 50 years. You could go back, if you wanted to say, the early 1960s when they eliminated Class B, C, and D, and it was all the reclassification. That's the last time that was something this significant. But you could really argue this is more significant. Major League Baseball now runs the minor leagues. That's never been true in baseball before. There's always been Major League Baseball, and there's been Minor League Baseball, and they've been two independent entities. And now, the Cardinals fans, you know, if you know your Cardinals fans, you know your history. You go back to Branch Rickey in the 30s, started to drive this idea of minor league teams not being truly independent, but being farm teams for the major league club. But even with that, and the steady rise of that to the 80s and 90s and into the 21st century, there's always been this separation where Major League Baseball had affiliates, but really the minors were run by themselves. They were run by Minor League Baseball in St. Petersburg, Florida. That's gone away this year. So we got this massive change. There's 120 teams now. There was 160 the last time we played in 2019. So you got all that going on. But then we also have going on, we're coming off of the first year ever in the history of minor league baseball that there wasn't a season. And when I say ever, and you can go back to the 1870s at the kind of the start of minor league baseball, there's always been a season.
Yep.
World War One, World War Two, there still were seasons. Last year, because of coronavirus, there was no season. And so with that, there's just so many players that it's like, we're just ready to see them actually play in actual games again, because it feels like it's been forever, because it has been 20 months in some cases.
Yeah, it's crazy. You're right. In putting it in all that scope, JJ, it is mine. And that's not even counting all the experiments that are happening at the various levels with, you know, the things that they're thinking about tweaking in at the major league level, but they want to get some of the data and see how it looks with limiting pickoff moves, for example, or putting the pitch clock on there. Like, you're going to play with different things at different levels just to see how they work independently of other things, which I think is a really good idea. Like, it's better than taking one league. I know the Atlantic League, and you were tweeting about this earlier, I know the Atlantic League is doing a bunch of these things together, but that is truly an independent minor league that works with Major League Baseball on some of these experiments. But I really like isolating the other ones at low A or high A or double A or whatever, because we can get a little bit better idea of what the impact of that particular thing is by itself.
And the thing about this is I would say that, you know, understandably, a lot of fans don't realize that this is something that has a long history. There's a lot of things that have percolated that have gone through the minor leagues and risen up to the major leagues. The designated hitter didn't just pop up as an idea that arrived and all of a sudden American League adopted it. You'd had minor leagues had been using designated hitters in different ways going back to the 60s, and it kind of shown how that works. You mentioned the pitch clock. Pitch clock's been at AA and AAA, has been a part of the minor league game now for several years, and still hasn't come to the majors yet, but it may. If it does, by the time it does, pretty much almost every major league player will have participated, played in games that already had a pitch clock, because we're now talking about, you have to be Albert Pujols and all. There are players still, but Yadi Molina, you have to get to really have been a longtime major league veteran to not have experienced coming up through the minors having had a pitch clock. They have robo-umps are going to be in what now is called low A Southeast, what used to be the Florida State League. So they're going to try automated ball strike calling with a TrackMan or a Hawkeye system this year. Mm-hmm. So you have all these different things going on, bigger bases in AAA. There are a lot of experiments going on. And we also have, again, like we had in 2019, the Major League Baseball being used in AAA, which is interesting, at least to me, because when that came to AAA in 2019, all of a sudden home run rates in AAA went through the roof.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense, right, that the players closest to the major leagues, though, would be using the same equipment, right? I mean, you want to have a better idea of what you're expecting, so you're going to play with the same ball, well, that'll tell you maybe a little bit more about how somebody's numbers and performance will translate. Both pitchers and hitters will translate once you move up.
It is. It makes a whole lot of sense. And when I talk to casual fans all the time, they always kind of seem to do a double take, like, wait a second, you're telling me they use different baseballs? I'm like, yeah, you know, they've always used different baseballs. And when major league pitchers would come down on a rehab assignment to AAA, they knew all about this. there were pitchers who would use the AAA baseball before all this changed in 2019 because they're like, I want my numbers to look better. And if I use the Major League Baseball, I know the ball's going to fly a little bit more. And so it seems, I guess it kind of seems illogical to a lot of fans that it's not being used at all levels of the minors, but there is kind of a limit to that because the baseball that they use are in Class A and Double A is a machine manufactured ball in China. And the baseball that they use in AAA in the majors is effectively a hand wound baseball made in Costa Rica. And they could continue to expand, but if they don't have the ability to make enough baseballs at that facility in Costa Rica to equip all of the minor leagues, if they wanted to do so, they could expand it to do AA one year, train enough people to do that, to build the baseball there. But if they're going to keep using a handmade baseball, it would take multiple years to phase it up to have enough people to do, to provide enough baseballs for all of minor league baseball. And they don't have that right now.
J.J. Cooper with us.
And it would cost more, which is probably more important.
Sorry. That's a really good point. Yeah. Can't forget that. J.J. Cooper, the executive editor of Baseball America with us. You'll find him on Twitter at JJCoop36. Looking ahead to the minor league season, and you know, I think it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a while, J.J., I think, before we can catch up and start to track like actual progress for prospects, right? I mean, we have a whole group of players drafted last year that we haven't seen in the traditional structure of, you know, four and a half, five months of games. That we got the, you know, we get reports last year from the alternate sites and all that, but really that's not the same as guys going out there and playing every day. So how long do you think it takes before we feel like we're actually learning something once the minor league starts? I mean, it's always a little dicey early in any season. You can look in the big leagues for examples of that right now. But how long does it take, do you think, before we start to establish some idea of what guys have gained and or lost in the last calendar year where we don't have a lot of data on how they've progressed?
I think it depends on what we're talking about. If you're talking about looking at the stat line, I think we're going to be talking about mid-June, late June. You don't want to overreact to someone had a good month. People have good months, people have bad months every year in the minors. And if you overreact to that, you're filtering out the signal and you're keeping just the noise. But at the same time, I do think almost right away we're going to know some things, though, because we're going to see pitchers go out there. And if a pitcher who was 90, 92 and didn't have a changeup pre-pandemic is all of a sudden 94 to 96 getting swings and misses up in the zone with the fastball and now has a changeup, well, you don't need to see a whole lot of starts to know, oh, that player got better, that pitcher got better. You know, if we see one of the things, I'll give you an example, like Nolan Gorman, obviously one of the top prospects in the Cardinals organization, his future, he was going to be the Cardinals third baseman of the future. Well, that might be blocked now in a good way if you're a Cardinals fan. But, okay, we're going to get to see – no one expects him. If he's going out there and playing second base regularly, no one expects to see him be a very fluid, big league caliber second baseman on day one. But you are going to start seeing pretty quickly, okay, so let's see how he moves out there. Let's see how he handles turning double plays, things like that. There are all these little nuggets that we're going to be able to gather really quickly. How much further along is Matthew Liberatore now than he was pre-pandemic? Is Zach Thompson throwing more strikes? Because that's really the big thing that Zach Thompson needs to do on his way up. There's all these little nuggets that we'll be able to at least take. Again, you don't want to make sweeping generalizations. Oh, this player can't do this or he won't do this because of the first month of the season. But we're going to know a lot more next month than we have for a long time, because I agree with you. We're trying to get as much information as we could from off-site, but off-site's not the same thing when there's a trash can playing third base, you know, because there's no one to play third base that day.
Well, I thought it was going to be an Astros joke in there for a second, but
I thought it. But I didn't really mean to go that way, but then I said, "Oh, when I go trash can, they're going to think I'm making an Astros joke here, even though I'm not really trying to."
J.J. Cooper from Baseball America is with us. J.J., of course, the executive editor of Baseball America. The full 2021 minor league previews coming out in print. It's heading to the printers tomorrow. Obviously, J.J. has been really busy. We'll pick up our conversation next, and we'll talk more about the Cardinals farm system in particular when we come back here on KMOX.
Get ready for the Cards and Cincinnati Reds Friday night. Ammon pregame show 6:20. First pitch 7:15. Hear it here on your voice of the St. Louis Cardinals, KMOX.
All right, picking back up on our conversation with J.J. Cooper from Baseball America. He is their executive editor. And, of course, you'll find him on Twitter at JJCoop36. And he's a great follow on Twitter, too, by the way. A lot of good baseball commentary there. A lot of information, of course, about the things that we're talking about. And, J.J., let's change gears just a little bit, and we'll focus a little more specifically on the Cardinals here in this segment and kind of, you know, number one, where they are, like how you guys look at the organization. And also, how do you look at it at the top end of the organization? I don't necessarily just mean like the amount of talent that's in the top 10, for example, but the people that are closer to the major leagues. When you look at the top of this organization, how do you guys see it?
Well, it's going to get worse pretty quickly, and that's in a good way, because we had Dylan Carlson as the number one prospect, and he's now graduated. So
that's
a good one, you know, because you have this 22-year-old who's really, really good, and he's already one of the kind of cornerstones of the big league club. So take him out of it. I think this is a pretty solid system. We ranked them 12th coming into the season among all 30 teams as far as organization talent. Mm-hmm. There's some close to the big league guys that we've kind of hit on a couple of those already, Libertor, Thompson, guys like that. Gorman, there's the guys who are a little further away, but are really interesting, like Ivan Herrera, really interesting young catcher. Mm-hmm. But the part that I'm really interested to see, and we haven't gotten to see yet, is I really like what the Cardinals did in the draft last year. And we haven't really gotten to see what they did, you know, what they've got from Jordan Walker, Mason Wynn, Tink Hens, guys like that. It was a 5-round draft, so we don't have to rattle off a whole lot more names. But I'm going to be interested to see what those guys do. I'm a giant Mason Wynn fan ever since I saw him as a rising junior at an event years ago now. But you're talking about guys who all have upside, who have tools and skills, that nice combo you're looking for. But obviously, these are also high school guys who are far away. So it's going to be really interesting to see what these guys do in a first full year. And on the international side, they signed Edwin Nunez. I'm really interested to see if this is the next Carlos Martinez, Alex Reyes type guy who they signed, the Cardinals signed, a little bit older pitcher, not the 16-year-old. A lot of times you hear being signed out of Latin America, but a guy who has present stuff. He already throws 100. I'm very interested to see him pitch.
Yeah, mentioned him on a pregame show earlier this week. He's got a couple, along with Herrera, by the way, as a pair of guys that you'll probably hear a lot about. I know that Herrera's already starting, as you pointed out, he's starting to make some noise in terms of showing up on top 100s and things along those lines, and he's a guy that they seem to like quite a bit. Nunez, you mentioned him, he's 19 years old. You'll like anybody that's 19 and throwing 100, I would assume, right? I know I do. As long as they can keep that arm healthy, right?
It gives you a lot more options. Now, again, velocity is not everything, and we are seeing that even more and more. You know, there's pitch, there's the quality of a fastball, the movement of a fastball, all those things as well. But 100 has a quality on its own, which is different. If you can have a 90 mile an hour fastball that moves a little better than a 100 mile an hour fastball. The 100 mile an hour fastball is generally going to be more effective because you have immediately reduce the reaction time for the hitter. And it makes the rest of your pitches play up. Even if you're not throwing that 100-mile-an-hour fastball every pitch, and you shouldn't, it does mean you got to be looking for that. And so all of a sudden, the slider or the changeup or whatever else you're throwing plays a little bit better too.
Right. Not to mention the fact that the arm speed helps with, you know, making that other pitch better in and of itself. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to be a little sharper break, a little later break, coming out of the hand a little bit more like the fastball, which is, of course, what we all want to see as we look at guys now. And you referenced three different guys. Well, I think you referenced two. I mentioned the other. But you mentioned Zach Thompson and Matthew Liberatore, two guys that are really well thought of. The team likes them a lot. We've seen Johan Oviedo already. He's similar in age to those guys, maybe a little bit older than Liberatore, but another guy that's big stuff, like, you know, mid-90s, can get to the upper 90s as a starter. But all three of them, you mentioned one thing that I think is going to be the key this year, all three of them still kind of refining command, right? I mean, that's kind of the next step for those guys.
Yeah, I think so. And to be honest, the one that's a little surprising, that's always been true, was Zach Thompson. That's been always the, going back to his days at Kentucky, it was like, if Zach Thompson can stay healthy and throw consistent strikes, the stuff's really good. And that's always been kind of his scouting report. It's been interesting. Matthew Liberatore has always been one of the most polished guys from going back to his high school days, going back to, you know, when he was an amateur. And I've tried to make a point of watching him when he comes up with the big league club in spring training, which we got to see him last year, we got to see him this year. And it has yet to translate at the when he's pitching in spring training at the big league level, that same level of control and command that he generally has been known to have going back. And I don't have an answer yet for that. I'll be interested to see, is that he's still worried that, you know, that maybe our reports from 2018, 2019 were a little optimistic on that? Or is it, which I think is probably more likely, is it the transition of facing more advanced hitters, facing guys in a major league spring training game where you're a little amped up, you're not really kind of getting that chance to show what you do at your best yet, because you're one of the youngest guys on the field. And I'm very interested to see what we see from Libertor over the course of a full minor league season, because that's something that we haven't.
Yeah, that's a great point that you make there too, because in that small sample size, you're right, you've got unusual circumstances. But like with everybody this year, you also, you know, he didn't throw 140 innings last year. You know, he didn't do any of those things. So it's really hard. It's been hard for me. I'm a prospects nerd, JJ. I don't have the contacts and don't get into it as much as you do. But I mean, I've been a prospects nerd for as long as I can remember. And, you know, it's never been harder to try to, you know, somebody will ask us, you know, especially Cardinals fans will ask, so what's, you know, when's it look like this guy might arrive or what's it? And I'm like, great question. I don't know. I mean, we haven't seen John Torres in a year and a half. We haven't seen, you know, Nolan Gorman for more than 7 at-bats or 8 at-bats in spring training. So it's really hard to know when somebody might be able to help.
It's a stumper right now. And go a step even further than that. I'm having to recalibrate. It's funny. I was getting a text from someone in the game a couple of days ago, and they were just talking about how when you look at ages right now of prospects, and it's really weird because the Ronald Acuñas, the Fernando Tatis Juniors, the Juan Sotos who reached the majors in 2018, 2019, those players have just rolled on because they're in the majors, they're stars, all that, right? Well, to give an example, J.J. Bleday, who was one of the top draft picks, first-round draft pick of the Marlins a couple of years ago, he's older than Ronald Acuña. But the thing about it is that while Ronald Acuña was getting 60 games last year and plus the playoffs, and he's going to get a full 162 this year, J.J. Bleday's, you know, he's playing outside a little bit, things like that, but he hasn't had the same level of development. He's kind of had, like all these players, they've kind of had this their careers interrupted a little bit. And, okay, are teams going to treat last year as – you were slated to go to high A last year, so we're going to send you to double A in 2021. Or are they going to say, you were slated to go to high A last year, you didn't have a season, we're going to treat it like you were injured, and so now you're going to go to high A in 2021? I don't have the answer to that because each team is having to make their individual assessments. And it's not even just that teams are going to have a blanket approach. They may say, this player really made strides at alt site, or this player who didn't even participate in anything with us did really well in their mound work at their hometown, working at a pitching facility. And they're ready for a jump, so we're going to skip them a level. But this player really hasn't progressed, so we're not. To go back to your question you asked before, one of the things I think that is going to be interesting is I think on day one we're going to find out some information, because we're going to see some players who are assigned to levels that are going to be eye-opening, where we go, they must really be impressed with what this player's done. And there are going to be other players, and you go, that player finished 2019 in low A, and he's back in low A to start 2021. That's not a good sign for that player. And there's going to be those little pieces of information that we get literally just from roster assignments.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. Man, we could go on all day, but I'm not going to do that to you. I appreciate all the work that you guys do at Baseball America. JJ, you guys are awesome. The preview's coming out in hard copy. Obviously, you know, those of us that get more of it online, we know where to find that at baseballamerica.com. And now it's going to be time to start digging in even more. Not that you aren't, but for guys like me, it's going to be digging in more on the draft. in particular the high school and college guys, as we start getting some more evidence on those guys too, where we, you know, that got disrupted. It's a whole another conversation I'm not going to bug you about now. I just wanted to say thanks for the work you guys do. For decades now, Baseball America has been great for me for, you know, for reading about prospects and college baseball in particular. I think you guys do an amazing job. I thank you for jumping in and joining us, and hopefully back to normal business here in the not-too-distant future for everybody.
Counting the days, minor league opening day, May 4th. It's not that far away, and I'm just trying to figure out, okay, so where am I going to be? And this has been literally the longest period of time I can remember where I haven't been to a minor league game. Since the 90s, early 90s. Great to talk to you, Kevin. You know, it's been fun.
J.J. Cooper, Baseball America's executive editor. You find him on Twitter at JJCoop36. All right, moving on from that, let's just start to look ahead. We'll tell you what's up with the Cardinals and the Reds next up here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Strike Zone, powered by Graybar on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, let's look ahead to what's on deck. That would be the Cardinals and the Reds series. And what's on deck is sponsored by Chesterfield Fence and Deck. You can find them at chesterfieldfence.com. So, looking ahead here, the Reds are dealing with some stuff. Cardinals are too, by the way, as we well know. They haven't won a series since the series down in Miami. And in each one of the series, they've split the first two games and had a chance to win it in the third game, and the offense in those third games hasn't really been there. In fact, that's actually true of the first Cincinnati series too. You won 11-6, lose 9-6, and ended up losing 12-1 on Sunday. So only one run in that game. In the Milwaukee series, the third game, the swing game, you only scored three. So now we're at a total of four runs in the swing game against Washington at Busch Stadium. That was a shutout, so you lost 6-0. So we're still at four runs in three games in these, you know, these rubber matches, if you will. Got shut out on Sunday in Philadelphia, 2-0. So again, still four now in four games, and shut out yesterday. So they've scored four runs in those swing games five different times this year. And again, they got one win in those. I mean, they didn't really have a swing game in the Marlins series because you won it right out of the gate by winning the first two and then taking the sweep. And I don't know that there's any way of connecting any of those things. I mean, they're all different pitching matchups. Like, you know, I don't want to compare, you know, Sunday in Cincinnati on April 4th to facing Aaron Nola on Sunday, April 18th. I mean, you know, some of this is matchup, right? I mean, you got Max Scherzer yesterday. And those are not the big concerns, right? When you get shut down by Max Scherzer, when you get shut down by Aaron Nola, I don't think anybody should freak out about that. Those guys are really that good. They do that to teams all the time. Don't sweat that. What's a little bit more nerve-wracking is when it's happening with other guys, right? When it's happening, when you're not getting one of the dudes on the other side. Then you get a little bit more concerned about the consistency of the offense. Because, you know, again, when Jack Flaherty shuts somebody down, for example, nobody in St. Louis is like, boy, that other team's terrible. I mean, Flaherty shut him down. I mean, you know, you look at it and you're like, all right, you know, no big deal when it's a star player that gets you. But when it's Jeff Hoffman, when it's Brett Anderson, you know, you feel like, all right, that was a missed opportunity. When you get those kind of things. When it's Nolan Scherzer, all right, fine. And really, you know, guys, that's kind of the difference between where you are and where you would like to be, right? I mean, when you really think about where you are at the moment, instead of being 8-10, if you were 10-8, if just two of these games swung differently, you'd be on a 90-win pace. I mean, it paints the picture for you, right? That's what happens early in the season. Now, you know, those games, they may be early, those games can be the ones that cause you to miss the playoffs later in the year, right? I mean, if you miss by a game or two, it can be games from any part of the year. It's not just the ones at the end. But that's how close you are to being right on schedule for what you'd like to be. And I know we all want a, you know, 9,500 win team that can go out there and, you know, do like what the Dodgers are doing or, you know, whatever. But I think we all knew that wasn't this team coming in. I think anybody expecting that was fooling themselves. I don't think anybody in the division is that team. But I think 90 is a realistic possibility for the Cardinals, the Brewers, Probably not the Reds, maybe, though. Maybe, I guess. I don't know. It's super early, so I'm not changing my opinion on them yet. I still think their flaws will show as the season goes along. But, you know, that I think that kind of thing, you know, you go from 8, the difference between 8 and 10 and 10 and 8 is obviously two games. And that's the difference between being disappointing and frustrating and being right on pace. So this is why I always advise early in the year, don't get your blood pressure up. Don't get ticked off. Don't get all mad. Yeah, you know what? If something's bad, you can say it's bad. I mean, we all do that. Everybody that looks at a ball game, anybody that watches a performance can say, you know, all right, that was a bad game or that was a bad performance or this guy hasn't put up numbers yet, whatever. I mean, you go ahead and do that. Just try not to make yourself sick coming to conclusions on April 22nd. There are no conclusions on April 22nd. The only conclusions that'll matter are down the road a piece. And maybe it isn't September. Maybe it's June or July if you fall back or if you make a big leap forward. Anyway, enjoy the weekend series. I'll be off tomorrow. We'll catch you again next week. Plenty of baseball for you on this 7-game homestand. Looking forward to Cardinals-Reds over the next 3 days. And, of course, the Phillies coming to town after that. You guys have a great weekend. We'll check in with you on Monday.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.